and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at a world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Riesbanel, and I am your host on today's program. The push is on for an open, free, neutral internet. The week of February 13th is where public interest organizations, tech companies, analysts, and academics participate in a series of events to introduce a true policy agenda for an open internet. I've got some comments from any of them. It's interesting. You will want to stay tuned. So as I mentioned, we're closing out here as we go to air a week called Open Internet Week 2003. Roughly organized around the Open Internet Coalition, which is pushing for policy, a nationwide policy of network neutrality. Going along with that, a new bill was introduced into the Congress this same week, primarily sponsored by Massachusetts Representative Edward Markey, again trying to establish network neutrality as the law of the land, meaning that anyone connected to the internet can exchange data freely across many different applications without restriction or discrimination. So to kick that off, there was a press teleconference that happened on the 13th of February, and I was able to tune in and listen and also participate, setting out the policy agenda here, telling more about this new net neutrality bill, and especially explaining how it does affect our ability to communicate in a variety of sectors. So we'll start off here to hear from Markham Erickson, who is with the Open Internet Coalition.
The Open Internet Coalition is a unique group of public interest representatives, technology companies, internet companies, consumer groups, and nonprofit associations. Appropriately, today we have representatives from the public interest and internet community here to discuss several important developments surrounding the threat to the open internet and the response by policymakers in Washington. To put a little bit of this into context, about 2 years ago, telephone and cable companies announced their desire to fundamentally change the way the internet works. They sought to shift the internet from an open platform that fuels democracy, innovation, and commerce to something that more resembles cable television. Tiers of service, much like cable television, that allow the broadband operators to decide what content and applications are delivered to consumers and at what speeds. There was a swift reaction from policymakers and consumers against this vision, culminating, we think, in the AT&T Bell South merger condition that affirmatively prohibits AT&T from prioritizing content. Yet over the last 6 months, we've seen repeated efforts by the telephone and cable companies to exercise discriminatory control over the speech and content that travel over the wireline and wireless networks. Only this time, the cable and telephone companies didn't broadcast their intention. We only found out about these activities after the behavior was discovered. Appropriately, these practices have provoked a broad public outcry, so loud, in fact, that they have caused some division and dissent amongst even the companies themselves on issues like wireless openness, internet filtering, and application blocking. And policymakers in D.C. have responded to concerns about these practices and are beginning to take action this week both in the FCC and in Congress. Congress will consider the Markey legislation that was introduced yesterday to protect internet freedom. The FCC is investigating anti-free speech blocking of text messages by Verizon and anti-competitive blocking of video services by Comcast under the guise of network management. And voters, of course, will be making a choice in November based on where the candidates stand, in part on their vision of what the internet should be and innovation and speech. So this is an important year. Will the essential openness of the internet be protected? Yesterday, Comcast filed its response to the consumer complaints and various petitions about its blocking of competing video distribution traffic. This was a remarkable filing, which we're still digesting, but appears to declare war on internet users, policymakers, and even the FCC. It essentially says that the FCC has no legal ability to protect consumers from discriminatory behavior. It says it can secretly block users' access to applications under the guise of network management. Is Comcast right? We'll see, and we disagree with their analysis, but these are critical questions, and as a coalition, we plan on making sure policymakers and the public are informed about why pro-openness internet policies are important to consumer choice, democratic speech, innovation, and economic growth.
Thanks, Markham. I'm Ben Scott. I'm the policy director at Free Press. We've been working on issues of open internet policy for some years now, and I think we've come to a point now where we can look back over the last 2 years and recognize that the net neutrality debates of 2006 were really a threshold issue for a much larger fight over what the future of the internet is going to look like. And really what we're looking at are two competing visions. One vision that's an open internet that puts control over the internet at the edge with the consumers and the producers of internet content. And there's another vision that says we want to move the control away from the edge into the center. This is the vision of the network operators, the cable companies, and the phone companies. It is a closed network vision. And there are arguments on both sides, but they are completely mutually exclusive. We're either going to go forward with a set of policies that promote and sustain an open internet, or we're going to change the way the internet works, and we're going to consolidate power in the center and replicate a model of walled gardens that looks a lot more like cable TV. As Markham was explaining, we see 2008 as a real moment of momentum for the backers of an open internet. The events of this week, the FCC filings on the Comcast BitTorrent issue, the winding down of the 700 megahertz auction where open devices and open software conditions on the C block were vindicated as good public policy. The FCC's announcement that they're going to have a public hearing on February 26 in Boston to investigate what the future of the internet should look like and the openness of online video platforms, the Verizon text messaging incident, and now the Markey bill. And the Markey bill is really the capstone on top of all of these developments that are building momentum for an open internet. The Markey bill takes a different approach than we've seen at net neutrality in the Congress, a very bold and sweeping approach that puts non-discrimination principles and directives from the Congress right into the foundation of the Communications Act. Much like we had in the early days of the internet in Title II, the non-discrimination principles in Title II are now being put into Title I of the Communications Act. That's the baseline law that says all broadband networks will from now on be open and will be guided by these openness principles, and instructs the FCC to go out and think about broadband policy across the board on this new background, a backdrop of openness, and to talk to public stakeholders about what the future of the internet looks like. We think all of these developments indicate progress for the backers of an open internet, and this is a moment of exceptional opportunity for the Congress and the agency to really move in that direction and benefit consumers who use the internet every day.
I'm Mark Luker of EDUCAUSE. We're the Association for IT and Higher Education, representing 2,200 colleges and universities of all shapes, styles, and sizes. And we're also a proud member of the Coalition. America's colleges and universities are rapidly adopting information technology to both improve and extend teaching and learning. Using our high-speed campus networks to link students, teachers, content, and instructional services in ways never before possible. Universities have even begun to share their entire collection of courses with anyone who has the capacity to reach it. We must now assure that the public internet can deliver the same capabilities off campus, where over 80% of our students live, and to every home and office in the country. We recently explored these ideas in our white paper, A Blueprint for Broadband. Big broadband everywhere will provide unprecedented educational and economic opportunities for our citizens in the future. But a broadband internet connection is only useful if it supports content and services that you need. A super fast connection that can only connect to the websites chosen by the internet service provider, or that does not provide access to distance learning, telemedicine, or the next creative applications, would not serve the consumer or the nation's economic or national security goals. At present, however, there is no legal requirement to provide consumers with access to the internet services they need. There's no enforceable rule preventing operators of broadband networks from blocking or preferring internet applications that they choose. The United States must adopt a simple provision ensuring that consumers can reach the services of their choice, that network operators cannot impede or degrade any lawful service or application in a discriminatory manner. LoEducause also hopes for streamlined, effective mechanisms of enforcement in the end. We strongly support the Markey bill for establishing the principle of network neutrality at this time.
And that was from EduCause, which is a national high-tech educational caucus organization. That was Mark Luker. We also heard from Ben Scott, the head of policy analysis for Free Press, and Markham Erickson of the Open Internet Coalition. Speaking at a national press teleconference, net neutrality in Congress and at the FCC. And I had a chance to ask a question about the likelihood that we will see this new Representative Markey-sponsored net neutrality bill actually pass the Congress this year, because this is one of, this is perhaps the third bill that's been floated in Congress since 2006 to restore network neutrality as the law in the land, law of the land. And I am curious to know, you know, what's going to make this particular time in 2008 special. Gigi Sohn, who's with the great organization Public Knowledge, answered my question.
I think what's different this year is the momentum you have leading up to it. I mean, you now have, you know, the carriers have been saying, you know, for the last year and a half, or for the last 2 years, this is the solution in search of a problem, this is the solution in search of a problem. Well, now you've got the Comcast petition. You've got the Views petition. Okay, that's the competitive video software company that uses BitTorrent. So they've got a petition. There's another petition pending that a lot of the public interest, same public interest groups are on, about Verizon and others blocking text messages. So now that there are no fewer than three complaints pending in front of the FCC. Clearly, this is a problem, now a problem in search of a solution. So I think it just comes at a different time and place. It's a little bit more hands-off than, you know, the prior Markey bill and the Snowdorgan bill. You know, for those who, you know, claim, well, it's toothless, well, why don't you ask Comcast and Verizon if they'll support it then? But the point is, it comes at a different time and place, and that's why I said this is the right bill for the right time, because it comes at a time where we're seeing momentum, we're seeing more and more instances of blocking and discrimination. Let me give another indication about how this might be playing out in Congress and among the grassroots. As some of you might have seen the news that Donna Edwards has been a vocal net neutrality supporter, defeated Al Wynn, who was basically, you know, bought and sold by the carriers. I don't think that that's an accident. I think in this election cycle, you're going to see a lot of people who've been bought and sold by incumbent industries of all kinds, not just in telecom, are going to go down to defeat. Not only in primaries, but also in the general election.
And as Gigi Sohn from Public Knowledge talking about why she thinks a 2008 is the year when we are very likely to see action on network neutrality. She made reference to Donna Edwards. She won the Democratic primary this past week to become the nominee to run for Congress in Maryland in the D.C. suburbs. And as mentioned, she won against a stalwart Democrat in the House who has been very friendly with telecom interests in the past. And you are listening to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Rees-Manil, and I'm your host. You can check out Media Geek online for the Media Geek blog. It's at www.mediageek.net. You can get this program at radio.mediageek.net. If you have any comments, please send them to me, paul@mediageek.net. And I love to hear from listeners. I'm really interested to know how many people are listening here on Community Radio WEFT, how many people are listening on other community radio stations all around North America, low-power stations and full-power stations, both in the U.S. and Canada, and how many of you might be listening on the Internet, listening as a podcast or otherwise listening online. So if you have a moment, especially if you're near a computer, drop me a line, paul@mediageek.net, and just let me know where you're listening, how you're listening, and if you have any comments about the program. So we are talking about this past week, ending today as we go to air, February 15th, 2008, which was Open Internet Week, where public interest organizations, tech companies, analysts, and academics have been participating in a series of events to introduce a policy agenda for an open internet. So on Valentine's Day, the 14th of February, there was a second national press teleconference, this time centering on BitTorrent, by and large. And it was called Opening the Internet to Future Innovation. The big focus is on this peer-to-peer sharing, file-sharing technology, which has allowed large files to be downloaded and shared all around the internet much more easily. And of course, if you've been listening to Media Geek, you've heard it's something which the large cable operator and internet service provider Comcast has been blocking. So let's hear from Marvin Amori. He's the chief counsel for Free Press, who's going to tell us more about what is going on with BitTorrent.
Last night, we filed comments in an FCC proceeding that will be critical to determining the future of innovation, free speech, and competition on the internet. Our filing is part of a larger debate. It's a debate about the future of the internet and of online communications between open networks and closed networks. And the question is whether we want networks where consumers can attach any device, access any content, and run any application, or if we want a closed network, kind of like the cable television network, where the network provider determines the applications, the content, and the devices on the network. And the threshold issue of this debate is network neutrality. Network neutrality would favor an open network where consumers could access any content or applications of their choice. And we've been arguing for years that without network neutrality, innovation in every sector would be threatened online. And we now have a very specific example of one key innovation that could be stifled, and that is peer-to-peer applications. For many months, Comcast was degrading and blocking peer-to-peer applications. When it was discovered in October, Free Press and other members of the SaveTheInternet.com coalition filed a petition, and there's been a lot of attention on the issue. And Comcast has been claiming that they're simply managing bandwidth, but what they're doing is in our opinion, anti-competitive and threatens innovation. It's anti-competitive because the peer-to-peer protocols they're blocking are the foundation of online high-quality video that competes with Comcast's video on demand service and their cable television service.
I'm the executive director and one of the founders of a relatively new nonprofit organization, 501c3. Called the Participatory Culture Foundation. We're based in Worcester, Massachusetts. Our mission is to promote free speech, cultural engagement, and open media online, and trying to take advantage of the opportunities that the internet provides to get more people involved in creating culture, building culture, and distributing it. Our focus right now and the centerpiece of what we're doing is called Miro. It's an open source desktop application. It's been downloaded more than 2 million times last year, and it offers our users access to over 3,500 channels of free internet television. And these are channels that are made available by the publishers in video RSS feeds of one kind or another. It's both mainstream content from major television networks, cable channels, and totally independent personal content. It runs the whole gamut. And it's all stuff, again, that's made freely available, distributed by those creators, and either done because they're trying to reach people, monetize through ads and things like that, or for any number of speech reasons. Like Mozilla, which makes Firefox, we're a open source nonprofit organization that's creating a consumer level desktop software product. Many of the publishers that we work with and that we distribute content with rely on BitTorrent technology to deliver very high-quality video to their viewers at a low cost. And the support in our software, the support in Miro for BitTorrent, allows these independent publishers down to just an individual in their bedroom to completely match the level of resolution, the high-definition quality that major companies can afford to distribute using BitTorrent without having to bear that cost of, really what's an overwhelming cost of bandwidth for files that can be 500 megabytes over a gigabyte. Not only does that depend on BitTorrent and having neutral access through that technology, But for the publishers that we work with, it's absolutely a free speech issue. And the only way that really independent creators can compete with the big boys is if they are able to deliver high-quality content in a peer-to-peer way and not have to bear the full bandwidth. The filtering that we're seeing from ISPs is directly affecting our users. We've recently updated some of our BitTorrent technology to support encryption to try to get around some of this, but there's only so much we can do on that side. And we really believe that in order to keep innovation and free speech online, we absolutely must have strong net neutrality legislation.
Thanks, Nicholas. Next, we're going to Eric Klinker, who is the CTO of BitTorrent. Eric?
I'd like to leverage a little bit on what Nicholas has said and state that BitTorrent as a company feels as strongly as Miro does in this regard. Our technology, of course, the namesake for many of the companies that use the protocol that was invented by our co-founder, Bram Cohen, in 2001. And in traditional open fashion, like the internet and open source, released that to the public. And of course, at the time, had no real understanding of how popular and how effective the technology would become. Today, 7 years later, by some estimates, this technology is responsible for over 50% of the IP traffic on the internet today. Of course, the software that we deploy and manage ourselves has been installed over 160 million times globally all over the world. And as you'll hear today from a couple companies, it's proven to be the foundation for countless innovation. Dozens, if not hundreds, of companies have leveraged the BitTorrent protocol, the open source protocol, to innovate in ways that were never really anticipated by, I think, the founder, and have formed the foundation of countless businesses. Some of these businesses obviously compete with us, but many others are providing value to consumers and users of the internet all over the world in ways that really are beyond counting at this point. The company BitTorrent Inc. has taken this technology and is seeking to bring it to the mass market, to commercialize it in a way that it is usable by any video publisher and can deliver the same benefits that the open source community has been seeing for years. And that is really just brutally efficient delivery of mass media. And of course, media files today are large, and efficiently delivering them over the internet is a significant technical challenge that is adequately met by the BitTorrent protocol. And I think you see that being evidenced in its widespread adoption by all these companies and all of these users. So the technology is proven at this point in doing the job that it was designed to do, and that is efficiently moving large files, specifically media, to large audiences. And BitTorrent, the company, as I've said, is commercializing this in a way that we can take it to any of the popular web properties that that you might be familiar with today. Recent news around this topic not only affect BitTorrent, but of course affect the hundreds of companies that use BitTorrent technology that are either trying to achieve the same thing or trying to achieve many other uses that have yet to be contemplated for this technology, which has significant bearing to our economy and I think the internet at large.
Back in November at an industry conference, I saw a keynote address given by your colleague, Ashvin Naveen. And he talked about your new BitTorrent DNA commercial platform. And someone in the audience did ask him about the Comcast blocking. And Mr. Naveen didn't seem particularly worried, indicating that the BitTorrent DNA is a different platform than the open source BitTorrent client, and gave the impression that the company would be working with ISPs, maybe Comcast, to ensure that free flow of traffic. So how do you kind of square this with your position here about net neutrality, which I think is great, and if a net neutrality legislation fails, does that mean that BitTorrent will then be pursuing other ways to make sure the commercial traffic goes clearly to consumers, but the open source traffic is kind of left out in the desert?
That's a great question. So obviously, BitTorrent has had a long history of being involved with the various networks. We have and continue to have strong relationships deep inside many of these companies, like Views, we're also a participant in, you know, some research-based activity like P4P that, you know, might provide a solution to accommodate the needs of both ISVs and P2P companies. So, you know, BitTorrent, we're a technology company. We're obviously, you know, looking for solutions to anybody's problems, including the ISPs. And if, in fact, the problem that ISPs have is degraded service that is caused by basically congestion, then we feel the innovative solution to that problem is simply better congestion control. And that technology can live inside, you know, consumer products. It can live inside commercial products. It's something we're actively working on that would prevent this very scenario of BitTorrent in any form causing a degraded service to some other application. And we feel that's perhaps possibly one solution to the problem. Of course, you know, this is a very, you know, complex issue on many different levels, and technology is simply one of them. So I think that's probably the foundation of Ashwin's comments at Streaming Media West. And just to state that, you know, we are actively working with a lot of these networks in many different capacities to try to overcome these problems.
So if you're able to develop technology that better assists in network management while also allowing free flow of traffic, will this be something that will be shared with the open source side, maybe with something like Miro?
Yeah, I think, you know, that's obviously, you know, the intention is as we continue to innovate, you know, the opportunity that, you know, BitTorrent initially created was through an open, you know, coalition of the open source community. And it was only through that openness that we saw the technology be adopted in the way that it has been today. The strength of the Internet is its openness. It will always be its openness. And that's really where technologies like this congestion control can properly flourish. And, you know, just to follow up, not every network operator that we've been interacting with operates the same way with this issue. And it's almost always driven by market forces. You know, these are businesses at heart, and we should always remember that. But in markets where a particular MSO is forced to compete with an offering like Fios, for example, we see a very different set of behaviors with regards to BitTorrent. They're actually coming to us trying to find ways to make BitTorrent faster for their users because they know that obviously P2P and consumption of rich media is driving the demand for both services in that market. So when competition is in place, you know, the sets of behaviors are often very different than environments where that's not the case.
And that's Eric Klinker. He's a CTO at BitTorrent Incorporated. He was responding to a question I posed to him about, if there isn't net neutrality, what are they going to do to help out everybody, not just their commercial clients? And that's something I actually spoke about last year in the show after I saw Ashwin Naveen at the Streaming Media West conference, where I heard what sounded like an answer about the two-tiered internet. I'm glad to hear that BitTorrent is taking into account sharing technology that might help moderate traffic usage and internet usage and make BitTorrent overall a better citizen of the internet. This brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'm host and producer Paul Riesmandel. I'll be back in 1 week with more news and views in our media environment. In the meantime, check out the Media Geek blog at MediaGeek.net. You can listen to and download the program at radio.mediageek.net, where you can also subscribe to the podcast. If you have any comments about the program, I'd love to read them. Send them to paul@mediageek.net. Media Geek is produced at Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois, and also is heard on 12 other community stations across North America, including KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, KQRP in Salida, California, KRBS in Oroville, California, WTND in Macomb, Illinois, WRFA in Jamestown, New York, CKDU in Halifax, Nova Scotia, KWMD in Kosilov in Anchorage, Alaska, Free Radio Olympia in Olympia, Washington, WVEW in Brattleboro, Vermont, CHMA in Sackville, New Brunswick, WBCR in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, and WPVM in Asheville, North Carolina. The Media Geek Radio Show is available for free to any non-commercial community station. Just send email to paul@mediageek.net.
Thanks for tuning in.